Good evening. It is 6 o'clock. We're all present, so we'll start this meeting of the licensing committee. Don't worry, it is followed by the planning committee later. Emergency evacuation through the doors there and the doors here. We're not expecting a fire, but if the alarm does go off, go use those doors and exits and meet in the car park. Item 2 are the minutes of the previous meeting. Now, I need somebody to move these because I wasn't there. Thank you, Snowy. And second, please. Thank you, John. Any apologies for absence?
Apologies have been received from Councillor Maud.
Thank you. Can we vote on the minutes? Oh, sorry, yeah. Can we vote on the minutes, please? Sorry. I'll stop saying because I'm under here. Yeah, likewise, I am as well. Thank you.
Chairman, I can't participate in this meeting, so I'm just wondering if all my abstentions for the votes of this meeting can just simply be ignored.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right then. That carried. That's carried. Thank you. I've no urgent business. Anybody, anything? No. Any declarations of interest? No. Thank you. Agenda item 6 is the update statement of principles. The purpose of this report is to advise members on the conclusion undertaken in relation to the Council's draft statement of principles in relation to the Gambling Act 2005 and to seek members' view prior to the adoption of by Council. Can I ask Ronnie McClure to introducing the report, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Members will be aware from the committee report that the response to consultation and the proposed revised statement of principles in relation to the Gambling Act 2005 was disappointing. Despite widespread consultation, only two responses were received. One came from a council member who was content that the policy was appropriate, and the second response came from Goschalk's solicitors, who act nationally on behalf of the Association of British Bookmakers. They stated that overall they welcomed the approach of the draft statement of principles and asked if we would consider three changes or amendments to the statement. The three changes requested have been incorporated into the updated statement, as all three add to its clarity. We therefore seek members' approval for the updated statement of principles and recommend it be approved for adoption by full council prior to its implementation date of the 31st of January 2019. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you. Any questions for the officer? To debate, into debate, anybody want to make any comments or approve or go away? No, I'm going to fight with that. From the chair, then I'll move the recommendation. If I could have a second, please. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Councillor Cleary. Thank you. Can we vote on it,
yeah,
please? You want to vote? That's unanimous. Thank you, that's unanimous. Thank you. Sorry, I have no further business unless anybody has anything. And so I'll declare this committee meeting of the planning authority closed. Thank you. Licensing, don't say planning. I'm getting ready for the next one.
Good evening and welcome to this meeting of Rydale District Council's Planning Committee. We haven't got a fire alarm. We aren't expecting a fire alarm this evening, so if it does sound, it is for real. Please leave the building by the rear doors or the door to my right and congregate in the top car park. Ladies and gents, toilets are in the corridor along with drinking water. Please can you ensure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent. We do have a number of speakers tonight. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Thank you. Moving on to agenda item one, apologies for absence. Have we received any apologies?
Apologies have been received from Councillor Maud. Councillor Wainwright will substitute.
Thank you. Agenda item two, declarations of interest. Are there any declarations? Councillor Paul Andrews.
Item 10, Chairman. The owner of the house adjacent to that, the site is a colleague of mine.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Item 8, non-prejudicial, and I've lost the other one, I think. That's the only one. Thank you, sorry, Chairman. 3, 8.
Thank you. Councillor Wainwright.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Item 7 and item 10, I'm a board member of the Vale of Pickering Internal Drainage Board.
Thank you. We'll move on to agenda item 3, minutes of the meeting held on the 10th of April 2018. Does everyone agree that these are a correct record? I will move those minutes. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Cleary. Thank you. Can I put those to the vote, please?
Can I just say I'm not abstaining to be awkward. I just wasn't there for most of the meeting.
That's correct. No, that's fine. Thank you. Mrs. Shields. Thank you. The minutes were approved. Agenda item 4, urgent business. I have no urgent business. Agenda item 5 is schedule of items to be determined by committee. Agenda item 6. Pages 10 to 21 on your agenda, and that's application land west of the Cayley Arms, Weasdale to Partings Farm, Alliston.
Thank you, Chairman. Members will recall this application was presented to the last meeting of the Planning Committee and was deferred for further negotiation on some of the details of the application that were discussed at the last meeting. Principally about the siting of the building, but also the size of the building and also its height. And you'll see from the updated committee report, Chairman, that the application has been varied quite considerably from what was presented to the last meeting. The siting of the building is now located further to the south, nearer to the A170, and as a result on lower ground is less visible locally in the landscape. The building has also been reduced in height and in size as set out in page 10 of the agenda papers. I do have some photographs, Chairman, but they are the ones that I showed you at the last meeting, so whilst I can go through them, if members wish me to, I'm happy to take them as we've previously seen, unless members need to be reacquainted. So the recommendation, Chairman, is to approve the proposal. There is one further update, which was a comment that we received on the 3rd of May from a resident of the village, a Mrs. Motley, who had written in wishing to support the application, and summarising her comments, she considered that the development as amended would not have a significant visual or amenity impact, but would allow a young local resident the facilities to develop his sheep farming interests. And that goes on to say that she feels that that's good for the local economy and helps to keep a younger generation working in the local community. So I have nothing further to add, Chairman. I think we do potentially have a speaker registered, which is the applicant and Mr. Stead.
Would any members like to see the slides? Because I'm conscious some members weren't here. You're all happy, are you? Okay. The applicant, Oliver Stead, would you like to speak?
No.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? No, we'll move into debate. The ward member isn't here, so would anybody like to take this on? Councillor Cleary, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I was disappointed not to be able to support this application last time for the reasons that planning officer has already given. The changes and amendments that have been made answer my problems last time, and I'm very happy to support this application and move it for approval.
Anyone else wishing to speak? Mrs. Goodrich.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to second this for approval now. I had some serious concerns about the height of the building and the inappropriate siting. I think these have now been addressed, so I think I'm happy to second it. Thank you, Chair.
Anybody else wishing to speak? I'd just like to say it's nice that we've been able to work with the applicant and officers and have come to a good place. Thank you. So we'll now put that application to the vote as it has been moved and seconded. That's unanimous. The application has been approved. Moving on to agenda item 7, pages 22 to 82 on your agenda, application at land at Rickle Drive, Helmsley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. When the officer report was originally prepared, there were several outstanding issues, which I've concluded in an update report to members on the late pages on page 3, and a list of recommended conditions to cover the development. The recommendation is now approval, subject to the 106 agreement relating to the affordable housing provision, both on-site and an off-site contribution. The late pages also contain a BEC inspection and maintenance plan on page 14, the further views of Helmsley Town Council, which is on page 17 and appraised in the report itself, and the views of Historic England on page 18, the council's housing officer confirming the affordable housing provision is acceptable is on page 20. Confirmation from North Yorkshire County Council Heritage Section on page 22 that the archaeological evaluation of the site is acceptable. There was nothing significant found. There are further responses from Mr. Christopher Rose, who is objecting to the development on pages 24 and 25, and a response from Mr. James Hare, who also objects to the development on page 26. I also omitted to mention in the update report that the Highway Authority's issues to do with the parking provision for plots 31 and 43 have also been addressed with a revised plan. And that was received after the report was written, but that is covered and reflected in the conditions recommended. Just to show members some photographs of the site, you'll appreciate that this is an allocated site in Helmsley. In the Helmsley development plan, it's been allocated for residential development. It's approached on Rickle Drive, and this is coming down Rickle Drive, and the site lies beyond the trees there. Because the site's quite an unusual shape, it's very difficult to get one photograph of the whole site, so you'd appreciate some of the photos to show it in a piecemeal fashion. And a bit further down Rickle Drive, again showing the site, and it does jut out at this point. As you'll see, the majority of the trees on the site are self-seeded. There is a beck that runs to the eastern side, and that contains more mature trees, which you'll see from this photograph. It's a relatively derelict piece of land, and this is the southern boundary of the site. and then panning north, looking at the site again. This photograph shows the development at Storey Close. As you can see here, the development is red brick. It lies on the eastern side of Helmsley, away from the historic core of the main town. And there is mention in the objection letters about the use of red brick on this site and the preference for natural stone. The scheme includes a 50-50 mixture of natural stone and red brick. And as you'll see as we go up Rickle Drive, this is the limes, and you'll see that the property on the front has natural stone, but beyond it there are brick properties, which I think is reflective of the proposal that we have in front of us. Then at the northern side of the application site, there is a bridge across the beck that leads to a public footpath. Again, a closer photograph of the bridge. And then the path itself. And this development does include a bridge within the application site that links to this public footpath that will hopefully improve the functionality and usability of this path for recreational purposes. I've got no further updates, Chairman.
Thank you. We do have a speaker who is the applicant, Andrew Scowcroft. Okay. Lovely. Thank you. We shall move on to questions for the officers. Does anyone have any questions? Council Windrus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was just wondering how confident the housing manager is that there are only three intermediate rent to buy houses, and is that enough? Because I would have thought I would like to see more of them, actually. And the other question is, I'm just wondering why there was no bungalows on site.
The requirement for bungalows kicks in at 50 dwellings. This is 46, so we're below that to require them. I think the intermediate provision is 3 out of 16. I think that broadly reflects what the intelligence is from the strategic housing market assessment. I think the applicant's own intelligence on sort of being an RP, a registered provider, in terms of what customers are seeking.
Are there any further questions? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
If I can just pick up on my colleague's comment with regard to bungalows, and I am aware that 50 is the point where we start to ask for bungalow provision, but if I remember rightly, there's just been a release to say that the homes and communities want more bungalows built to meet the need that elderly people have. We are not meeting that need, and it's disappointing there isn't some provision in here for the elderly need.
Certainly not aware of any adopted sort of policy. I think this is partly the issue, and I think some of these pronouncements are coming out around the proposed revised MPPF, which is due in the summer, but yet to be responded to. And indeed, at the end of this agenda, we have a suggested response to that document. I think, for example, if that was an issue that you wanted us to cover in a response to the MPPF about housing mix for the elderly, then that's something that we could consider. I suppose at the moment the dilemma we have is that we have a development plan-led system, and actually the Helmsley plan is the most recent plan that we've got in terms of an adopted plan, which was the plan that we dealt with the national park. It was a whole settlement plan. Alan's comments about the SMAR figures are right, and I think I recall in the meeting that there was also an indication that some of the developments in the town had come forward that were meeting other needs as well, which were on other sites on the national park side of the border. So I think this developer's fairly confident that the proportion of rent to, you know, sort of intermediate product is right for the settlement when you take the whole thing into account. which covers sizes and tenures.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for the officers? No. We shall move into debate. And Councillor Windrus, your ward member.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, I am supportive of this. It has been coming for a while, as this application, and I'm still a bit disappointed that there's only three of the intermediate ones, but there we are. That, if the officers say that's fine, that's fine. So I'll move approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else wishing to speak? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's the right development in the right area. It's the edge of town. It's just making Helmsley a little bit larger than it already is. And so I'm quite happy to move approval. However, I would like to see more provision for elderly housing in bungalows in future.
Thank you. Is there anybody else wishing to speak? It has been moved and seconded for approval, which will be subject to the Section 106 agreement. So I'll put that to the vote. Thank you. That's unanimously approved. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 8, pages 83 to 206 on your agenda. Application at land adjacent to Auburn Cottages, Langton Road, Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members will see on the agenda papers there are quite a lot of plans attached to this report. Unfortunately, the plans on pages 103 and 107 to 122 are superseded and are not part of the consideration of this application. All the other plans are actually on the agenda, but unfortunately too many plans have been put on there. It's the dwelling types with render that they're not proposed now. On the late list at page 27, there is a revised layout plan that was received to try and overcome the concerns of the Highway Authority. That has reorientated plot 65 and overcome the visibility within the site boundaries for that plot. However, the Highway Authority still remain concerned that plots 1 to 7 are served by a private drive. North Yorkshire County Council have a policy requirement that no more than 5 dwellings are served by a private drive. At the point of coming to this meeting, we did receive a revised drawing showing one of the plots being served by the main arterial route and a substitution of 2-for-1 on the site between plots 2 and 3 and plot 18. That's something that we need to reconsult the local highway authority on. We can't be making a decision on that with such a short space of time. There's also a copy of the applicant's response, that's from Keep Moat Homes, to the Norton Town Council at page 29 of the late list, addressing the concerns raised by the Town Council. There's a further letter from the Heritage Section at the County Council confirming the written scheme of investigation is satisfactory and condition of 12 of the outline approval can be discharged. And there is a response from Yorkshire Water recommending conditions. Unfortunately, this is a reserved matters application, so we cannot impose conditions in respect of drainage at this stage. But the issue of drainage is already addressed at outline stage, and there is a condition on that outline permission that deals with surface water drainage. And I've spoken to the lead local flood authority, who are convinced that the drainage scheme on this site can work, and there would be a subsequent application to discharge that condition at a later date. The countryside officer is happy with the updated landscape plans that have been received since the report was prepared, and the Himalayan balsam treatment is acceptable, but it requires some amendments to the scheme to offset the loss of hedge on Bearsley's Lane. So the outstanding issues with the application are that overcoming the local highway authority's comments, but we feel that there is a solution to this that is viable, relatively minor in the scheme of things. Information required from the countryside officer, and we still haven't agreed a brick sample for the development. But if members are broadly happy with the scheme and the details, I would recommend that a delegation is made to the head of planning to resolve these. I think with the brick, what we're trying to do is get something which closely aligns with the old Norton brick, so it's a pale, buff, pinkish brick. And the ones that we've got at the moment are quite red, and we want to improve the scheme if we can. The conditions that I would envisage being imposed relate to one detail in the plan numbers. At this stage, relating to materials, brick samples, and a panel of walling, details of the access arrangements onto Bearsley's Lane, and details of the bridge over Millbeck. I've got some photographs as well of the site for members. So this is the site frontage along Langton Road, looking out of the town. You can appreciate that at the moment there'll be a leaf, but there is a substantial hedge along the frontage. And this is looking from the southern side back towards the town. And this shows the properties on the opposite side of the road, which you can see a single story and now closer towards the town they are two-story. This forms the northern boundary of the site. This has got the non-designated heritage asset behind those gates and down that drive. Those of you familiar with the appeal and the process will know all about the heritage assets and the development framework plan that's been designed to accommodate these. And that's the current access into the site. And some photographs from within the application site looking towards Sutton Grange House. Then looking south across the site. As you can see, there is a fall on the site from Langton Road. This is taken at the western side of the site. A few more just panning round. This is the existing access across or access through Millbeck for farm traffic. Another photograph taken within the southwest corner of the site. That's the nearest property to the application site. You appreciate there is a levels difference from that site onto the application site. And this is on Bearsley's Lane, where the proposed access cycle provision is provided for on the outline permission. And then a photograph taken of the site further back on Bearsley's Lane, showing the planting already available on the western boundary, which is to be retained. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. We do have a speaker, which is an objector, Catherine Rigg. If you'd like to come forward, you can come and. You'll have 3 minutes if you could press the button in the middle. Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you.
So I think we have several objections on various different grounds. The first of which is around the nature that you've started to address about sympathetic to the local area. So I think the red brick is obviously quite different to the local setting. Other properties in the area have been held to things like having slate roofs, wood fascias, exposed roof joists, so I think it's only appropriate that there is some consideration taken to maintain that sort of aspect with the new properties. The other issue we have is around the traffic report. So I think that was conducted quite a long time prior to the current application. So a lot has changed since then. The Norton Railway Junction is now different. The new school is in place, the primary school, with different traffic calming measures. I think anyone that drives up and down there regularly is aware of what a bottleneck that area can be. So adding all of this additional traffic is going to cause significant challenges to people in that area, not to mention the impact it's then going to have on the infrastructure in the town as well. So things like doctors, schools, parking, any challenges around, I don't know, things like the supermarkets. If you go at certain times of day, you can spend 10 minutes driving around the supermarket trying to find spaces. You know, the structure within the town isn't suitable for numerous different dwellings and all of the associated cars and people that come with that. The other question that we had was regarding the landscaping and managing of boundaries. So I think there was provision would be made, but in terms of actually specifying what that would be to protect neighbouring properties, there wasn't much actually outlined as specifics with regard to what that would be. Other considerations were around wildlife that resides in the area. So we have owls, deer, pheasants, newts, all not just in the area, but specifically on that piece of land. So it's what consideration has been given to the impact on them. Challenges with the water pressure in the area. I know there's been conversation about water displacement, but actually in terms of the infrastructure within the town, the water pressure, managing the sewage, and any runoff from the site. And then
30 seconds left.
With regard to protecting the night sky, so Scott's Hill and the surrounding footpaths are areas of outstanding natural beauty, and obviously putting a lot of streetlights and all of the associated light pollution that would come with the development. It's a question around what consideration has been given to that. And then finally, the noise appraisal doesn't mention, that I'm aware of, anything around what measures will be taken during building work. So in terms of scale of noise and minimising the duration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to come back on a few of the points there, taking them in the same order that I noted them. The appearance of the development, I think you'll probably see by the fact there's an error with the agenda and the original plans were put on there, you'll see that we have tried to negotiate as much as we can to improve the appearance and the design of the dwellings and the house types and reduce the number of three-storey properties and try and introduce the types that are representative of the area or the best representative of the area. We've ensured that the fascias and soffits are a dark colour as opposed to a series of white colours which could look quite stark. We've got clear pantile roofs and some of the flat concrete tiles which should try and replicate slate as much as possible. I note the point about trying to encourage the high quality materials that you made, but it's very difficult with a volume house builder to do that, and I think we've gone as far as we can to get the design and appearance as much as we can. The traffic comments and the provision locally for services are points that would have been addressed at the outline stage together with the noise as well. These are principal issues, and when the inspector allowed the appeal, he was granting planning permission for the development. What we're doing now is considering the reserve details from that grant, so we're looking at the appearance, we're looking at the landscaping, we're looking at the access for individual plots and the layout and the scale. We can't revisit those other issues that you've mentioned. The ecology as well was addressed at that stage, and any conditions that the inspector saw fit to apply, meeting the test of reasonableness in his opinion, have been applied. That too would have addressed any conditions to protect residents through construction. Having said that, I think an informative to draw the developer's attention to the considerate construction scheme to try and mitigate the impact for residents is something that we should include. Regarding lighting, I think it's inevitable that there will be some light spillage from the lighting of an area like this for a number of houses, and it's obviously safety issues if we don't light it. I think modern lighting is designed as much as possible to limit any spillage outside of the areas that need to be lit. I don't think there's anything further, Chairman. Sorry, there was one final thing. The landscaping of the boundaries and the maintenance of it is addressed through condition 16 of the outline permission. Thank you.
Thank you. Have we got any questions for the officers? Councillor Paul Andrews. Oh, Councillor.
I defer to Elizabeth Shields.
Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Madam Chairman, all the points that have been brought up by a resident here are the sort of things I've got on the list and other members may have also. And it is so complex an area, this, with the way it's going to interfere with Basley's Lane. Some of you may well know Basley's Lane. A lot of you may not have an idea what it is, where it is, and how it's going to be affected. I would really like to propose a site inspection. Now, over the last few months, we have actually been twice to Pickering. Quite rightly, I've been very glad to go and see exactly what has been proposed there. And I really think we should come to Norton to have a look at this before we go any further, so that everybody, unless everybody is au fait with the area, it may be, I'm sorry, I don't wish to underestimate anybody's ability to know this part, but it is going to interfere quite a lot with Basley's Lane, which is a cycle path, it's where the horses go, and how they're quite going to do that, it hasn't been made clear to me. And I, therefore, would first like to have everybody who doesn't know this on a site inspection before we go any further. There are so many things about it. I'm not against the housing, but there are many things, and the traffic, of course, is one of the major items. The difficulties lower down the road have already been mentioned, and they're not going to get any better by the time we've got something like 80 houses or whatever coming up. Further up on the Langton Road. So that's what I would like to do, Madam Chairman. I propose that.
Thank you, Councillor Shields. Did you actually have a question? Because we were actually only in questions for officers. But could you just put your microphone on, please? Thank you.
Bottom of page 89. At least 89 on my papers. There's a very bit about it's about the surface water drainage, right, for the rest of it. And I don't understand it. It's the last sentence. It said, it must be clearly established that there will be not exacerbate the current situation with and all around Norton Moulton. Somebody like to tell me exactly which of those bits should be in there and which should not.
Chairman, that's a quotation from the lead local flood authority. That's
well, they're at the creek. I mean, it's not. It's ridiculous. The English is just not. I mean, do they mean to say establish that the current situation will not be exacerbated? But the way they put that, you've got two that's, and I'm not quite sure. I tried to read it in two ways. If somebody can just sort of sort it out, perhaps Gary can tell me what it's really meant to be.
That was a bit of a hospital pass, Councillor Shields. I mean, I think the gist of it is that the lead local flood authority is not objecting to the application, subject to the application of particular conditions. But what you have to remember here is, and this is the dilemma for the speaker who spoke earlier, is that the principle has been established here. And much to our annoyance at the time, because if you recall, this was one of two applications that was refused by this council, which went to a very lengthy public inquiry with us versus Gladman's, and sadly we lost out on that that debate. But because of that decision, and because of the many and numerous conditions that the inspector saw fit to put on, and Alan's got the decision notice there, so he'll probably whisper to me how many conditions were put on, what we're left dealing with are the details. And subject to those details being acceptable, that's all you're dealing with. You're not really dealing with traffic, you're not dealing with surface water drainage, aside from the conditions being discharged on the detail. And so Alan said 16 conditions, which is less than some we might have had. But the issue for us really now is not to be in a position where we can revisit the issue in relation to whether or not there's been a recent piece of traffic calming done, or whether the schools have an issue. That's all been dealt with. We're in the life of the planning permission, and all this authority can now do is deal with the matters of the reserve matters that are still left before us. With that in mind, the Baselys Lane, I never know whether it's Baselys or Baselys Lane, lane connection was actually part and parcel of that outline planning permission. So it's got permission, you know, so we can't revisit that. We can't say, no, you can't have it. It's about the detail of how we manage that connection and make sure it's a safe connection for cyclists and pedestrians. So that's really the point I'm trying to get over tonight, is not that you would be revisiting the site to say there shouldn't be the red line link to Baselys Lane, which I think I'd just seen on page 96. You can see the red line of the plan there, which does a dogleg at the bottom. That's already been through the mill. And so we're not in a position to revisit that now. I think, having said that, I mean, clearly you are in a situation where, although the planning applications, it was plural at the time, which went to appeal, there was a lot of illustrative material done around that, particularly around matters relating to the heritage assets, and include Sutton Barn, which is the northern smaller site, as well as Sutton Grange House, I think it is now, where the open spaces were shown diagrammatically so that there would be the least possible impact in terms of how these new buildings would impact on those heritage assets. And you've heard from Alan already that you know, when the application came in, we had designs and materials that we were not happy with. We've gone back and renegotiated those and come up with schemes which we think are now more in keeping with the general locality. But that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with those details rather than matters of principle.
The only thing is, Madam Chairman, it really concerns me about this. And I haven't. If you've had a site inspection before, I was on the committee some while ago, okay, but not while I've been on, certainly in the recent couple, two or three years. And there are so many things that I want people just to see what this is involved. We've looked elsewhere. We've been looked to Pickering, and I was happy to go there, as I said. But at the same time, this is something which, if you don't know it, fine, okay. You know, you're just going to do it blind. And I would really like people to be aware of the cross, particularly with Baselys Lane, because it's narrow, it's winding, and so on, and it has its own precarious situations quite frequently. That's all. There is so much else, you know, still to be looked at, huge number of the reserve measures that we've got to discuss, and I feel that people should be just more aware of the area itself than you are maybe at the moment.
Thank you, Councillor Mrs. Shields. We are still in questions. Councillor Paul Andrews.
This is before we go into debate, isn't it?
Yes.
Just a couple of questions. First of all, page 89 on ecology and arboricultural considerations. I mean, there was reference to a landscape statement from the officer. It says, "Is that the response which had not been received to date, and that third paragraph. That's the first question. And if you can then go on to the other questions.
Yeah, the update I provided at the start of the presentation addressed the outstanding issue in the ecology section.
So that's okay. The other thing is this business about the affordable housing, and I think there's one shared equity house, and I think 34 or something, or I can't remember the exact numbers, of rented accommodation. Now, I mean, I hear lots and lots of stories about from people. And I don't know whether they're true or whether they're false, but the rumour is that the people who come in from far away, that actually there are more affordable houses than there are people who want to go into them, on the rented side, that is, and that there isn't the accommodation for shared equity, and I'm just wondering if this council should be doing an exercise to actually evaluate what the affordable housing need is actually in Moulton, and I'd like to know when the last evaluation was made, when this was last tested, because personally, I would want to see far more shared equity houses on this development and far less rented houses.
The last strategic housing market assessment was done in early 2016, and that is requires a lesser amount than is proposed here in terms of you're talking about discount for sale, intermediate products as we might describe them. There's 4 out of 30 there, 4, not 1. The report says it on page 92. Yeah. But I think in the context of what the current strategic housing market assessment says, this is meeting what that document says. That's our adopted document on our evidence base. They're usually updated every 5 years, so it's a recent update. It was a piece of work we commissioned jointly for our district, but it was at the same time we commissioned the work with Hambleton, and I think it was the North York Moors. I'm not sure who the other authority was, but we may well recommission that work when we come to review the plan, which will probably be early next year, I would imagine, or sometime shortly after that. But these requirements are the requirements that we negotiate through our housing manager. And so she's not asking us to negotiate things that she doesn't think she can fill with local people, meeting the full range of affordable housing need, which in Moulton and Norton is hugely for rent. If we stray beyond that, we're just sticking our fingers in the air in terms of what we're negotiating on affordable housing, just on a whim. You know, we have to work on an evidence base, and our evidence base says this is meeting the local affordable housing need, particularly in Norton.
What I'm saying, Chairman, is that is what the evidence base says is not the allegorical information that I'm getting from people in the street.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Paul Andrews, still in questions? So, Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I remember this. We fought as a council not to have this development and lost the appeals, which was greatly disappointing. And so there are a lot of things happening tonight that we maybe wouldn't have done if we hadn't lost the appeal. So anyway, there we are. But can I just go to page 200, which is the inspector's conditions for site A, and also there's the same conditions for site B. And one of the speakers tonight raised the issues to do with noise and also lighting. And the inspector actually makes provision for that at little 8, condition 7, small 8, for hours of work. So we could curtail the hours of work within reason so that people are not disturbed by noise, and also public lighting schemes. So we've got a possibility to influence the public lighting scheme as an authority, and I would hope that we'll do that based on the objections this evening.
I think, Chairman, this is always the dilemma when we're dealing with an outline application that gets permitted with a list of conditions, and we then very often then will get the reserve matters that come in, which are just the pretty pictures. We don't actually get the detail to discharge the conditions, which all relate back to the outline, until there's a developer pretty much getting ready to start building what they've then got the detailed consent for. So if we grant planning permission for the reserve matters tonight, in effect, then the developer can't start building until these conditions are discharged. So the advice that we would take on the appropriate form of lighting for the estate roads and the like will come from the Highway Authority. I think it's fair to say in years gone past that those street lights would have been rather more, you know, sort of glaring and orange and glowing than what you get nowadays as part of those sorts of schemes. But it's something that we'd negotiate with the Highway Authority on the basis of a submission that would come from whoever then does the development at the end of the day. And the same with the construction method statement. But it's not prescriptive. It's something that would come forward, probably detailing, you know, morning starts, evening finishes, weekend activity, all that sort of thing. I guess it will probably very much follow the advice in the considerate construction constructor scheme.
Any further questions? No, we shall then move into debate. Councillor Shields, is there anything else you wish to add? I was just asking if there's anything else you wanted to add as ward member. If not, Councillor Paul Andrews is waiting in the wings.
Fairly unhappy with it. It's another great piece of land going to be used, and there are going to be the problems, and no matter what you do with the reserve matters, they're still not going to alter some of the existing difficulties on Langton Road. It's just getting worse and worse. The great pity is that nowadays, instead of keep taking out bits of green or adding on greenfields and turning them into housing everywhere, but particularly in Norton, and there's also going, I know, in some places in Malton, is that they don't actually go somewhere and build a new town and start it off completely differently and provide all the facilities with all the infrastructure it should have, with the medical facilities, with the proper roads, with the school and so on, instead of just adding on bits and bits, taking off the green land that we have and just, you know, continuing to build, because this is the quickest way of doing it, irrespective of the sort of way, in fact, you know, it's affecting the whole of our towns. So that's all. I mean, if nobody can can have a look at it, well then I'll have to do my best, that's all. Anyway, thank you, unless I'm going to go through all these other points, I don't think so. I've said what I want to say, and I hope that perhaps people will have a look at it eventually and just see what really concerns me and what obviously concerns member of the people who are living in residence. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I mean, this was a very unfortunate decision, and what we're dealing now is with damage limitation. I mean, there's no other word of saying it. I mean, if you drive down Langton Road and you see all the traffic bumps and bits of pavement sticking out of the middle of the road, it's quite unbelievable how anybody in the County Council could possibly have said that this was okay. And it's quite unbelievable that the inspector could have approved it. But there we are. We have an outline decision, and we have to administer it. What we're now asked to do is to give the planning officer, the officers, the power to go away and negotiate a couple of matters, sort a couple of matters out, and then issue the consent. Now, one of those matters is in regard to the highways issues. and and they say they think they can get that there's a way around of this. Around this, they haven't told us what it is. We don't know what it is, and I don't think that we should issue, consent until we know what it is. And and in order to be in a position to assist with our views as to how this development should proceed and how it, and how the highways issues might be dealt with. I mean, we might, as a committee, have although we are not highways experts, we might have some views which might be helpful. I think it would be a good idea if we did have a site meeting, and I would support Councillor Mrs Shields and second her motion.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak? I've got a mover and seconder for a site visit. I haven't got anything else, so if we'll put I'll put the motion to have a site visit to the vote. That has been lost. Can you please put your microphone on?
Sorry. My second motion, which I hope Councillor Shields will support, is that the application be brought back to the next meeting with the officers' views as to how the highways issue can be resolved.
I will second that, Jim.
I am fairly sure that if the officers aren't happy with solutions, that they will be bringing it back to us anyway. But I have a mover and a seconder for the application to be brought back to the earliest meeting with the highways solutions. So I will now put that to the vote. Thank you. That has been agreed, so the application is deferred and we'll come back to a later meeting. Hopefully, June. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
Right, we'll move on to agenda item 9, pages 207 to 214 on your agenda. Application at the Grange, Martin Road, Sinnington. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome Alan to the meeting. He's going to take us through this next application.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 9 relates to the erection of an agricultural building to house a milking parlour at the Grange, Martin Road, Sinnington. There's no updates to the report as published. The application is a major development and is therefore reported to committee, although there are no objections to the item. I'll first run through a series of photos to illustrate the application site and describe the proposal for members. This first photo is taken approximately 130 metres to the south of the application site. It's facing towards the existing farmstead. Members will make out that on the right-hand side of the photo is the existing farmhouse and a range of agricultural buildings for the dairy operation extend to the west. The new building would be central within this photo, adjacent to the gable end of the agricultural building that occupies the centre of this picture. The flood zone is to the west, land to the off this photo to the left hand side, and the siting of the new building has been chosen so to avoid the flood zone and also to avoid views south from the farmhouse. This is a photo taken within the existing farm facing south. This is obviously an external area currently used for storage of manure. The building would be on the agricultural land, the greenfield land that's just visible in the centre of that photo. This is a close-up zoomed-in photo just showing the existing arrangement of buildings. The new building would be substantial in size, just under 1,200 square metres, and would stand at a ridge height of 7 metres. This is taken from a field gate opening on Martin Road facing west. This is facing directly onto the proposed area where the building will be constructed. The external materials of the building would match the existing agricultural buildings on the site, which would comprise concrete panels to the lower levels and Yorkshire timber boarding to the upper levels. Again, this is just moved further round towards the right-hand side, facing northwards towards the existing buildings. In terms of the landscape impact, the application site doesn't fall within any nationally or locally designated landscape areas. The application has been discussed with the countryside specialist, and it was concluded that in light of the design and external materials and its position in relation to existing agricultural buildings, that further screening would not be required in this instance. It's also relevant to note that there are no immediate residential receptors that look onto the site. The village of Martin is approximately 800 metres to the southwest of the application site. So when viewed from the south, the new building would be read alongside existing agricultural buildings. There are no objections received from any of the statutory or non-statutory consultees, and no comments have been received from members of the public. It's considered that the development represents the development supports the land-based rural economy, in this case dairy farming, and would not have an unacceptable impact on the open countryside, local amenity or highway safety. It's therefore proposed that the application is approved.
Thank you. We don't have any speakers on this application, so I'll move straight to questions for officers. So does anyone have a question? Councillor Wainwright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, it said proposed scale materials and colour finishes are standard for this type of agricultural building. What colour will the roof be? It's a large area.
The roof covering would be the fibre cement covering, which is anthracite grey. So in terms of the appearance corresponding with existing buildings, it's not considered that that would give rise to any adverse visual impacts.
Any further questions? No. Oh, Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
I hear what you're saying about the proposed fibre cement roof covering, but anthracite grey is much darker than what's already there.
So I think we think it's better than what's some of the ones that are already there because it's recessing into the landscape against a dark backdrop.
Okay, we shall therefore move into debate. And we don't have the ward member. I was wondering whether Councillor Windus wanted to take it because it was his old.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. It was previously my ward. I know this farm, and like I said, it's not anywhere near any residential, so I have no problem moving it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, thank you to the officer for his report. At the risk of
repeating his approval and also Councillor Windrus's motion. I'm happy to second this. I think this is exactly what we want to support in Rydale. Furtherance of agriculture in general and dairying in particular, I think it's what we all want to hear. So I'm very happy to support this.
Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Mrs. Shales.
Yes, I think it's very good to know that we're going to have more dairy and more cows in here. I'd much rather be drinking milk from our own country than possibly from anywhere abroad.
Thank you. Is anybody else wishing to speak? No, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote. Thank you. That has unanimously been approved. We'll move on to agenda item 10, pages 215 to 227 on your agenda. Application at land at Eden House Road, Old Moulton.
Thank you, Chairman. This particular application is a reserve matters application on the large area of land that we granted outline planning permission to way back in 2015. And since we granted that grant of outline planning permission, there have been one or two changes in relation to the way the site was originally envisaged to be developed. Probably the most noticeable one, which I would imagine most people in this room will have seen, is the new roundabout on the A169, which is actually around about 200 or 250 metres north of the Eden House turn as it originally was, arising as a result of an unforeseen fibre optic cable that was zigzagging across the road in a position that nobody knew where it was. And so that's why on the history section of this report there is a reference to the full permission for the roundabout access, which is now in and fully operational in a roundabout way. Wrong word, but it was a fortuitous, because I think all concerned see that as a safer way of getting onto the A road rather than at the point of the original turn, which was much closer to the A64 and the descending ramp from the trunk road. So this application is effectively the first reserve matters application we've had come in. The applicant, I think, is here tonight, so I'm not going to steal his thunder and say too much. I'm sure he's registered to speak. But just a couple of updates. The Vale of Pickering IDB have confirmed that they are happy with the clearances from the drainage ditch, which is actually located on the inside of the site behind the hedge that we'll show you in a few moments. And I think there is ongoing discussions with the IDB about future maintenance arrangements. So as far as the IDB is concerned, they're more than happy with the localised surface water drainage arrangements and long-term maintenance of the ditches. Not the previous scheme, but the application before, we actually still do await final comments from NYCC Highways to some of the technical drawing information that we've subsequently had submitted, and it is subject to that clearance. The one matter I would wish to draw to members' attention on page 218, however, is relating to the County Council's original requirements for the provision of a turning facility at the end of the access road, which you can see in more detail on page 220 and 221. And the applicant's response to that is set out on page 218. And in essence, the applicant is sort of rather reluctant to do a full turning facility at this stage when the roadway is clearly intended to go on into the site where a further facility was intended in the fullness of time. So at this stage, the applicants are wishing to not put a turning facility into an adoptable standard. And I think on balance, that's something that as officers we think is not unreasonable given what we're dealing with here. For our perception, and certainly I reckon the Economic Development staff who were very much involved with the FES, the Food Enterprise Zone, is that a lot's happened with the infrastructure, the roundabouts got in, and yet there's now been a little bit of a lag, and we want to see something happen here to keep the momentum going. So I think that's really something that we want to encourage in broader terms. I'll just show you some photographs of the locality for those people who maybe aren't so familiar with the site. This is a photograph taken This is effectively Eden House Road now, but it's the widened part, and that's the roundabout in the distance on the A169. So this is the new link road that cuts across the site, and that's the landscaping on the northern boundary of the application site. So I'm standing in the turning area of what was going to be the site of the relocated livestock market and agribusiness part of the site. So panning across, this is that entrance here. That's the entrance into Eden Camp, and this is the southern periphery of the site, which is largely hedged, but obviously there are some gaps and there's some new planting gone in this area here. And that's where the overhead lines are, just to orient you, and the planting, which actually forms the line of the A64 in the distance. So this is standing in the entranceway to Eden Camp, looking back to where the first photographs were taken from. And as you can see, there's well-established hedgerows in this area here. Panning across, that's where the new planting's gone in. You can see the roundabout again in the distance. And panning across to where the Eden House Road originally turned and came in off the A169. You'll notice here that there's now a footway connection all the way back to the A169 to the bus stops, where previously there wasn't one, so it's got a lot better connectivity to the Russells and Eden Camp sites. This is a view taken from the connecting east-west road from the A169 from the roundabout back across towards Eden Camp. So that's the Russells and Eden Camp site here, taken from the side of the road and just panning across. This is the new link road across from the roundabout to Eden House Road here. Now the road is slightly above the level of the adjacent land, but not greatly so. And this is a view taken from the bell mouth of the entrance to the Esper Sykes turn. So you're back up towards, this is the A169 in the foreground here, the overhead lines, hedge road boundary here. And it's in these areas that some of the structural planting that will be planted will be on the southern side and the western side. So there'll be more planting as well as the original and existing hedge rows. And that's just panning across to the point of the previous junction. So hopefully that gives you some idea of how these buildings will sit in the landscape. I think the proposed units are acceptable in their design approach. They broadly follow the design brief that was forming part of the FES, and we welcome the application as officers, Chairman.
Thank you. We have the applicant registered to speak, James Marshall.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
I'm James Marshall. I won't take too long, don't worry. I represent CDP, the developer in this instance, and we would like to. We've already spent a lot of money putting the roads in and getting. We got a grant for it, but we didn't get a grant for the whole lot. We would like to progress matters forward. We've had a number of occupiers come forward, but they would like to see things progress further before they commit to the site. So the way that we're going to do that is we are going to commit to circa £2.5 million worth of building some speculative units, four at 5,000 square feet and two at 10,000 square feet. The issue regarding the highways department is that they would like me to spend an extra £100,000 putting this hammerhead in, which we don't believe is actually necessary. And, you know, you can go on forever. We're already improving the pavements. We're already improving the lighting to the road, then the main spine road through the middle of the development, and you can go on forever. If people keep asking, people keep paying, and we can't. At the end of the day, there's only so much you can give away with. So we would like to carry on and get on with it and move forward. We are committed to doing so, we're happy. And I'll just ask that you back your officers in this recommendation for approval, so that we can get on and get some industrial units into your town. Thank you.
Thank you. Do councillors have any questions for officers? Councillor Mrs. Shales.
This is a question which is similar to one that Councillor Goodrick raised on the earlier one. At the bottom of the first page, or page 215, I think it is,
the colour of the roof. It says the roof's proposed to be
goose wing grey. Now, I've got geese living near me, and they're all white. So I'm not quite sure what this is, whether it's a deep grey or a light grey. And then it goes over the page, you see, on the next page, and says that the combination of Merlin grey and Hamlet pale grey. So I just wondered, you know, how pale it is, how dark it is, and is it going to fit in anyway?
So, Mrs. Shields, I'm appalled that you haven't looked at your BS colour chart before coming tonight. But to assist you, I shall give you that the goose wing grey is BS colour 10A05, and Merlin grey is 18B25, and Hamlet, which is also a different colour of grey, is a RAL colour 9002. Having said all that, in all seriousness, the colours of the sheds are, if you look on page 222, it gives you an indication of the variation of tones and colours of grey. They're all on shades of grey, as it were. I'm not suggesting there's 50 shades of grey here, but there's at least three. And in that sense, the window colours, the door colours, are also coordinated with that design and colours and tones of buildings. I think if I was to compare those with perhaps other buildings that we've built on our industrial estates over the last few years, I think they'd bear favourable comparison. Apologies for what the BS colours tend to be called. It just is the way that they are.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes. Do I gather from this that we have it? We have this development with planning permission. We've got a roundabout. We've got a developer. We haven't got any tenants. And the whole principle on which this planning permission was given, the moving of the livestock market, we're no further forward on that.
Well, I think the simple answer to that is, at the moment, we're aware through the actions of other officers of this council of the economic development activities that go behind the scenes. But ultimately, for somebody to come and invest in Moulton sometimes take more than a road and looking at an empty field, and that's what you've just been told. And clearly this developer is wishing to put their money where their mouth is. We've set up the FES, and it may well be that if this had come forward through the Food Enterprise Zone proposals, that there wouldn't have been a need for any of this reserve matters application. They could have made that approach, but it would have been solely limited to somebody engaged in food production or the like, whereas the developer here is wishing to explore the whole range of users. And I'm sure if the developer here had somebody who complied with the FES come forward, they'd be more than happy to accommodate them in these units, which bear favourable comparison with what we've delivered elsewhere. But that's the nature of commercial development.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I refer to the requirement of the turning head, and I can quite understand why the applicant would wish to defer that or put it to one side, because it's not necessary. I just wonder, are we able to put a time condition so that if there is no further development neighbouring, we can go back and say, no, you haven't made the time angle, the clock is beaten, and you must put in a turning head to meet the highway's requirements. If, and hopefully there are further applications come in neighbouring, the requirement is not necessary. But I just think that if the turning head is required for highways requirements and the highway ends where it ends on the application site here, we're going to have a substandard road layout. Are we able to impose a condition like that?
I think it would be very difficult, but I think I'm to some extent I'm a bit hamstrung because I haven't got the final comments of the Highway Authority before me to fully answer your question. But I think the approach here is that, in highways terms, this is a relatively small stub serving a relatively small number of relatively small units in that sense. And the applicant's highway consultants have put forward an argument and said, well, actually, we think on its own merits there's sufficient turning space within the plots. But clearly they're not saying that they wouldn't wish to do that in the fullness of time, but it's more a question of You know, if we accept this with the suggested limitations that are in the, set out in the report to prevent, you know, abuse by other traffic or people parking on there when they shouldn't be, that is something they would wish us to consider. I think the dilemma we've got is that it's potentially requiring a punt that's putting in another quite a big wedge of money at this stage of proceedings. I think we are expecting the other side to come forward, but it's like everything else. We expect sites to come forward, and sometimes 18 months later, the site still hasn't come forward. It's a judgment call, really, Chairman, but I think it would be difficult to add conditions to this application, because it's a reserve matters application, that are more onerous, that are on the outline. And I think that's the difficulty I would have with putting a time limitation on it.
Thank you. Any further questions? Not, we shall move into the debate, and the ward member is Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. This, as far as I'm concerned, this is an unfortunate case where we've given consent without protecting ourselves with regard to insisting that there should be a previous move of the cattle market before any of these developments were built. As consent has been given, there's no way I can move refusal, but there's certainly no way I can support it either. I'm still concerned about the drainage aspect. I've seen an area of one of the fields which has been waterlogged even in the driest weather, and it's not the one where the reservoir has been built. I've heard from sources. Drainage sources from a drainage expert that in fact the requirements, the criteria that are used to say whether or not a detention reservoir is suitable or big enough or the drainage arrangements are suitable and so on, those criteria which apply in this country do not apply in other countries, and in the United States they're much stricter. I really am concerned about the way this development has progressed. I can't move refusal. I should just abstain, and I should just register my protest, and I want my vote recorded, please.
Thank you. Councillor Wainwright.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think there's a strange comment from the Mount Moulton Town Mayor when the page 18 does say Moulton Town Council have resolved to recommend approval of the application.
Yep. Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to move approval on these units. I think we've got to get on and develop the FES site. However, yeah, I am mindful that the whole point of enabling development of Broughton Road was to secure a livestock market, and that's still the goal I would like to see achieved. So I'm hoping that by doing this tonight, we get one step further forward to a livestock market for Moulton.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Councillor Cleary.
Yes, I'll second this. I'll second the proposal to move it. We are where we are. I think, in many respects, this has merit on its own. And with any luck, and we shouldn't say luck, it's planned to be a trigger or a catalytic development. And somebody's putting money into it to invest in the area, and I think we should accept that, and so I will support this and second the proposal.
Thank you. Yes, I'd just like to note that, yes, it is unfortunate that the cattle market hasn't come forward yet, but I think this is a step in the right direction, and one that we need to take, so I'm happy to support this application. It has been moved and seconded, so I will now put it to the vote. Thank you. That has been approved.
Can I have my vote recorded, please, Chairman?
It is recorded through the system.
No, I recorded on the minutes.
Yes, certainly. It will be recorded on the minutes. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 11, pages 228 to 235 on your agenda. Application at Land Southview and Corner Cottage, Forkers Lane, Setterington. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. This is a site that probably most members on this committee will be familiar with. I think we did a site inspection when we dealt with the application in 2015 now. So time flies, doesn't it, in terms of the... in fact, sorry, 2016, which was for a revision to the precise siting and the height of the building. This was at the corner of Forkers Lane and Secretary. When I show you the photographs, you'll remember it. At the time that we were considering it, the application was a shell, and it was a timber looking affair because it was built out of a sort of a modular construction which was very insulated. And if you recall, there was concern about the design of the building, and I forced you to walk around most of Setterington to look at individual designs. So it's that plot. And members will recall that there was two dwellings set relatively far back on the plot to align relatively closely with the adjacent listed cottages, which was a terrace of three cottages. And at the stage when planning permission was originally granted, both dwellings were shown with their access onto Forkers Lane. So there was essentially a shared access arrangement where the access and around four parking spaces was all provided within the one plot to serve both dwellings. This application seeks to split that out so that essentially you've got an access and turning facilities with two car spaces for each of the plots, with a retention of an access point on the southern boundary on Chapel Lane. Now, that previously was a requirement to be closed in association with the 30-mile-an-hour road. It's 30-mile-an-hour speed limit. And partly that was because of sight lines to the corner. You'll see from this committee report that there is a current live scheme for a 20-mile-an-hour zone to be introduced into the area, which is anticipated to be functional by July of this year. And that's quite interesting, and it's quite important, because what it means is the vision spay requirements from the southern access are much reduced to start off with. And what it means is that effectively much of the hedgerow that exists also around the corner of the property can be retained at the point of access. So it's not just a highway safety issue, it's also a visual amenity issue in the conservation area. So I hope that sort of sets the scene a little. So this is where we are. And since you were probably most of you last here, this is now stone clad, in effect, with the clay pantard roof and the chimneys on and the timber windows. This is looking eastwards, so this is standing in front of where the bridge over the Setterington Beck is behind me as the photographer. Heading out, there's the Wald Hills in the background, and this is the hedgerow that goes round the corner. Now, this is the access point here, which was a gated access point. Now, it wasn't, you know, there's no drop curb or anything, but there was a requirement for the access to go there, which I'll show you the other in a moment. This is looking back the other way, so there's your bridge over the Beck, and this is the access point here. As a result of the reduced speed limit that's coming into play, what it means is that the splays are A, much reduced, and B, it means that there's virtually no hedgerow loss at the point of the access because of the width of the pavement. And so this is from the sort of truncated road that heads off towards the church. So I'm just stepping back a bit here. So this is what the buildings look like now. So that's the line of the terrace of properties here. And you recall we adjudicated on the increase in the height because of the ground levels and because of the slight raising of the eave. And so this sits almost in a line with that existing pair of properties. So that's what the 2016 permission in essence granted. I'll draw attention to those because that's the point at which the approved access is, but it's for both properties. So if you lived in there, you'd have to park here and then go across the curtilage of the other bungalow, which is less than desirable, I think, in terms of livability. but there was a highway safety reason for it. This is just panning around slightly, and that's looking back round again. And again, the splay that comes across here, at this point here, can be accommodated in the 20 mile an hour stipulation, so it reduces the length of the splay. I'm sorry these are a little bit overexposed, but it was actually taken on the same day, you wouldn't believe it. But this is the current access point, which would be widened and would have had four spaces in this area here. I think it would actually have been quite a difficult manoeuvre if they were all in place and you met one coming back out the other way, but that's what was approved. And at the time, the Highway Authority felt that was the only acceptable solution with a 30 mile an hour limit. And you remember there's also a driveway here which serves the bungalow and the property behind, so there's quite a lot going on at that particular point. This is looking back the other way, and obviously at the moment the road bends around, and I suppose at 30 mile an hour you're seeing things quite quickly, whereas if it's 20 miles an hour you've got more time to react. So this is further back up the road, and again that's that driveway entrance to the end unit. So that's what's being proposed, Chairman. The Highway Authority are happy with the revised arrangements, but there is a particular reference to Condition 3, where this requiring this development not being brought into use in advance of the speed reduction scheme. Clearly, that's essential, and that's expected to be July this year. Also draw attention to the Setrington Parish Council, who rightly draw attention to the original requirement, but of course that was at the point where we were looking at a road speed that is 50% faster than what we're going to be looking at in July. So that's where we are, Chairman, and the layout would end up being as set out on page 235, where you've got two separate accesses to the two dwellings. Subject to the highway conditions recommended, we recommend approval, Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? No, we shall move into debate. And the ward member, Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, Gary, for your report. I think in a small number of respects, this is actually improvement over the existing scheme. In terms of hedge openings, and the conditions allow for, limit its use until the speed limit is imposed. And with that in mind, I will support the approval. I'll move approval.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? No, well, I shall second it from the chair and put that to the vote. Unanimously approved. Moving on to agenda item 12, pages 236 to 263 on your agenda, application at the Old Vicarage, Hog Lane, North Grimston. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The application relates to the Old Vicarage in North Grimston. As members will see, it's quite a lengthy description of development, but to summarise the main elements of the application, they relate to the two-storey extension to the north-facing rear elevation of the building and a two-storey dormer window on the west elevation, together with a detached garden cottage in the northwest corner of the site. I will run through a series of photos of the application site and describe the proposed development. This shows the west and south facing elevations of the Old Vicarage. The property is a detached four bedroom property set within substantial grounds, well landscaped, on the northern edge of the village of North Grimston. The application site falls within the area of high landscape value. This is a close-up of the southern elevation, the main entrance of the dwelling. As members will see from the photo, the building is in currently in a state of disrepair. There is water penetration and damp in the external walls. One of the aspects of the proposed developments would reinstate a main entrance an entrance canopy where you can see the previous has been removed. Also, windows would be replaced like for like with timber frames. Again, this is showing the south-facing elevation and part of the east elevation of the property. And moving round to face northward, you can make out the wall of the existing sunken garden, which is to the rear of the property. This photo shows the existing northern range of the building, later additions, extensions to the old vicarage. These are proposed to be demolished to make way for the two-storey extension to the property. This is a photo showing the pond area and sunken garden, the walled garden, that would be redeveloped as a again as a walled garden, but obviously in better condition. This is the northwest corner of the site. This is the position of the proposed garden cottage. The double garage would make way for that particular building. Members will note the existing landscape screening along the northern boundary, which would be retained and enhanced as part of the application. The garden cottage would have a slightly larger footprint than the existing garages and a higher ridge height. On the left-hand side of the photo, you'll be able to make out the existing wall of the garden, and the garden cottage would be constructed. The west-facing elevation would be constructed into that wall, and it would face out into a small enclosed garden area, which is a standoff from the Grade 1 listed church to the west. This photo is taken within the site, facing out to the existing access with Hog Lane, the public highway. The application includes plans to widen the access, and there would be a new gravel driveway that would lead northward from the access. That would result in the removal of, I think, a total of four trees within the site. This photo illustrates the established screening along the western boundary of the site. This is taken from the public highway just south of the Grade 1 listed church. This photo is taken to the north of the church within the graveyard. Again, it just illustrates the dense planting along the site boundary. An objection has been received from the occupants of North Grimston House. This photo illustrates the northern boundary of the application site. This photo is taken from another listed building in the village, facing northwest, again just showing the screening that is currently available for the old vicarage. And this is taken from the eastern side of the site, adjacent to the public right of way. This is the only opening in the existing planting with views into the site. You can just make out the northern range that would be demolished to make way for the two-storey extension. This photo, again taken from the public highway facing towards the site, shows the planting along the southern boundary of the site, and just to illustrate the screening. In terms of the objections received, the Parish Council and also the occupant of North Grimston House have raised concerns about the impact on the setting of nearby listed buildings. The Grade 1 listed church is to the west, North Grimston House to the northwest. The application has been discussed with the County Council, with the District Council's Conservation Officer, and it's been concluded that, in light of the existing screening and separation distances, that the development would not result in adverse impact on the setting of those listed buildings. Conditions would be attached that would require the retention and enhancement of existing planting along the site boundary. A further concern that's been raised relates to the proposed garden cottage and the actual proposed use of that aspect of the development. It's noted that the building would be larger than the existing double garage, but in terms of scale and appearance and design, it would be subservient to the main property. It would also benefit from the significant screening in this area, and in line with policy SP21, a condition would be attached to any permission granted that restricts the use of the garden cottage to only members the wider family of the occupants of the main property. So this would ensure that it's only an ancillary use and would not be able to be let out or sold separately. It's considered that the old vicarage occupies a significant position within the village that's characterised by its setting and form, although it does not, at present, it does not include any external architectural features of merit. The proposal represents a sensitive redevelopment, restoration and extension of an asset that has the potential to make a significant contribution to the character of the village. It is therefore proposed that the application is approved.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. You mentioned four trees are being taken out or are going to be taken out. Is that to accommodate the new driveway?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Any further questions? Councillor Wainwright.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The garden cottage, is that a single-storey internal building then, or is it a dormer roof?
It would have a studio area at first floor level.
Right.
That would be within the roof. The only habitable space is on ground floor level, which would comprise a kitchenette and I think a small sort of lounge area.
Thank you.
No further questions. We shall move into debate. We don't have the ward member here this evening. Councillor Cleary. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I will continue. Thank you, Alan, for your report. It is well screened. I think the limited amenity, there were comments or objections on amenity. Such limited amenity loss have been addressed by the applicant, as far as I can see, in the amendment to, I think, one particular window. It is bringing a building that's obviously needing some attention back into use, so increasing the stock of Rydell's property. The conditions attached to the garden cottage maintain it as an ancillary building, not a separate building, so I don't think we can possibly object to that, and so I will support this application and recommend approval.
Thank you, then. Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I'll second that approval. I've known this property a long time with the previous owners, and it's still tired. Is the property? It needs a good thing. The only little thing is that the fish pond's going to go. So, but I do. Sorry. Yeah, no. Yeah, thank you.
Anybody else wishing to speak? No, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I shall put that to the vote. That's unanimously been approved. Moving on to agenda item 13, pages 264 to 297 on your agenda, application at Harem Methodist Church, Chapel Lane, Harem.
Thank you, Chair. The application relates to a proposed change of use and alterations to the existing Methodist Chapel at Harem. The conversion would see the building converted to a four-bedroom dwelling. There's no updates to the report as published. I'll run through a series of photos just to illustrate the application site. The first photo shows the south-facing front of the former chapel. Members will note the quite elaborate stained glass windows and double entrance doors on that particular elevation, along with the wrought iron railings along the front. The building is within the village conservation area, albeit on the periphery, and it does face outward from the village. It doesn't occupy a central position. It's also been considered as a non-designated heritage asset, so it does have features which are in our interest to preserve. This photo shows the eastern elevation of the main chapel. There's the existing access off Chapel Lane on the western side, which is between the chapel and two semi-detached cottages. This photo shows the north-facing elevation. The only alteration to this elevation would be the addition of a window to provide light into the basement. This is facing north along the existing access, which it is a narrow access, but the nature of these sites is that they rarely do have a lot of space around the building. In this case, it does benefit from a piece of land to the rear of the chapel, which could be used as an amenity space and would also be used to provide an area of hard standing for the parking and turning of vehicles associated with the residential use. This is just showing the visibility from the existing access. This is facing east across the neighbouring cottages. There is a blind corner on Chapel Lane, although highways don't consider there to be any issues in terms of visibility. It is a service road that is not heavily trafficked. Again, this is just showing the visibility in the opposite direction, and it could be argued that the number of vehicles using this building would potentially be reduced once it's in residential usage. Again, this is just a photo showing the main frontage with the stained glass window with floral insets. The external alterations would be kept to a minimum. The majority, all of the existing character features on the chapel would be retained. This photo shows the west-facing elevation of the former schoolroom community hall. This is where, at first floor level, an extra window would be added to this elevation, gable end, to provide light into one of the bedrooms. Again, this is just facing towards the west elevation of the building. In this area, the application site boundary is tight up to the building, and there wouldn't be any amenity space or garden in this area. This is facing northwest from Chapel Lane. Just to highlight the proposed addition of conservation roof lights, there would be 5 roof lights added to the building in total to provide light to bedrooms and bathrooms at first floor level. It's not considered that any of those roof lights would introduce any loss of privacy issues for the neighbouring properties. One of the objections has been received from the occupants of Mulberry House, which is shown on the left-hand side of this photo. That shows the gable end of the property. The chapel, albeit there would be the addition of the bedroom window at first floor level, there would be a degree of overlooking towards the property, but it would not directly face into any habitable rooms on that property. The concern is the potential loss of privacy to the front garden of that property, but it should be noted that it does face out onto the public highway, and there is intervening accesses to other residential properties and boundary treatments in the form of hedgerows and fencing in the intervening space. The main garden of Mulberry House is to the rear, north of the building, and it's not considered that the additions to the chapel would result in any privacy issues. This photo faces towards the existing outbuildings that have been converted to form two garages. and this is facing northward, showing the garden area, and on the right hand side in front of the converted garages is the area that would be used for the parking and turning of vehicles. This is just photos to show the inside of the chapel. There is a condition that would be attached to any permission that requires submission of a schedule of features that would be retained or removed from the building, obviously to provide the provide for the residential use. The pews would require removal, although it's understood that the glazed entrance that you can see at the back of that photo would be retained. This is facing towards the raised pulpit area, an altar, and you can just see the carved stonework, which again would be retained as part of the conversion. I'd just like to return to one of the earlier photos to highlight the other objection. In addition to the concern about the loss of privacy, the occupants of Primrose Cottage highlighted concerns about the service strip, which is it's just shown underneath a at the back of this photo. You can see the first floor window of the Primrose Cottage, which overlooks that area. There were concerns about the maintenance going forward of that piece of land, but it is considered that would be a civil matter. There is a condition that relates to the drainage works, which would require the making good of the land for any drainage associated with the residential usage. The application has been put forward without the local occupancy restriction, and the recommendation reflects that. The officer report does highlight that there is conflict with policies SP1, SP2 and SP21 of the local plan. But it is acknowledged that the existing chapel is a maintenance burden for the Methodist Church circuit, and due to the requirement to retain the character features of the property, the conversion's costs would be high. It's considered that in weighing up the conflict with local policy, that more weight is afforded to the retention of the character features and sensitive conversion of the building. It's also a material consideration to note that the majority of the money raised by the Methodist Church circuit is reinvested into their other assets. There are no objections to the application from any statutory consultees, and it's considered that the proposal represents a viable alternative use that would preserve the character and appearance of both the non-designated heritage asset and the wider village conservation area. The conflict with policies SP2 and SP21 has been weighed against the benefits of the conversion, and on balance greater weight is given to the preservation of the character features of the chapel. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted without the local needs occupancy condition.
Thank you. We do have a speaker on this application, which is the agent, Margaret McKinder.
Good evening, Madam Chairman. Good evening, members of the committee. The chapel has been empty now for nearly a year, partly because of legal work needed by the owners to research and establish a clean title for sale, which has now been done. But they are obviously keen to try and find a new owner for the building as soon as possible, as already has been described. The scheme does retain all the features, including the stained glass, and to achieve this, a modern passive ventilation / air conditioning system is necessary, so the windows are not disfigured with any new opening lights, so it would be retained completely as it appears at the moment. Obviously, a conversion of this size will involve significant cost, and the site constraints would not allow the conversion to more than one dwelling. We did look at this, because this would involve adding many more windows onto the building, changing its appearance, and also causing parking problems on the narrow back lane, bearing in mind that the land that we've got at the moment attached to the chapel does allow for parking and turning, plus a bit of additional amenity space. So the scheme will be expensive because the building is large and the number of local occupiers able to afford that level of investment, and also, I have to say, are likely to be attracted by the idea of living in an ex-religious building. It doesn't appeal to everybody, will be quite or very small. So we therefore do ask that the consent should be granted without the imposition of a local needs or occupancy tie, as was actually done at Barton de Willows Chapel, which was a building quite similar to this, but actually not quite as unusual. This one is a particularly fine example of an Edwardian chapel. We can reassure members of the committee members that virtually all the proceeds from a sale will be ploughed back into Methodist work in the local community. And the circuit recently has been working to provide facilities in their remaining projects, properties, for projects which benefit the local community, such as things like lunch and tea events for the elderly and lonely, preschool playgroups and clubs for young people. And a number of these projects have been set up in recent years and are proving to be popular and worthwhile. So one hopes that the money that's raised from this project will continue to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Shields.
The officer spoke of one extra window going up for a bedroom at the one gable end. Presumably that will be kept in keeping with the rest of the windows of the chapel.
It would, yes. It would be a timber casement window. And the final details would be reserved to planning condition for approval.
Right, thank you.
Any further questions? If not, we'll move into debate. And the ward member, Councillor Windrus?
Well, it was.
Oh, sorry, but pardon.
I'll take it anyway.
Thank you, sorry.
It is good to see that the majority of the external features will be kept, and I have no problem with it not being local occupancy, as prices in Erin for substantial buildings like this certainly aren't cheap. So, and it'll be good to see it brought back into use. So, I'll move approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Provided that window is really in keeping with what's there, so the others have stone sills and the stone top, then I would like to see it happen at that, so that it was really in keeping. I'm happy to second this. There's no doubt that falling numbers for congregations within the Methodist circuits are having an effect on all the buildings that they own. We've lost the Methodist chapel at Claxton. We've done Barton last time, and this is the next one, really. And if all the features are kept, I will bow to the fact that there's no local needs occupancy clause, which is something I'm usually particularly keen on in these situations. But I think it is much more important that we keep both the external character and as much of the internal character of the building. And that does come with a cost, and I recognise that. And it would be outside, I think, most local needs occupancy affordabilities. So I'm happy to second it, provided all of those provisos are put into place.
Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yeah, I think the officer has produced an excellent report. He's told us exactly what the issues are, and he's given a clear recommendation. I think it's a terrible pity that some beautiful old buildings like this are actually falling out of use, but I support the application.
Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Yes, just to say, it's really quite sad in some ways, isn't it, that this is happening to so many buildings like this. But the one good thing is that they're going to be protected and they will be used. it seems to have happened for quite a number of places you've had locally. I remember there was another one at Great Bath, but that's been changed very many years, but again has gone back into Hassel. But I think we need to support it, so at least it's going to give a family somewhere, somewhere to live. That's the main thing.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded for approval, so I should put that to the vote. Thank you. That has unanimously been approved. Moving on to agenda item 14, pages 298 to 320 on your agenda, application at Church Farm, Westgate, Rillington.
Thank you, Chairman. This particular application relates to a complex of buildings that are located immediately adjacent to the A64 within the heart of the village. And there you have a site I'm sure most of you have gone following that traffic off towards Scarborough. And this is the range of buildings on the southern boundary of the site which are directly abut the trunk road. So on the location plan, this is the house that's shown as number 10 on your existing layout. And there's quite a noticeable range of single-storey outbuildings in brick and pantiled roof, both to the east and west side of this existing building. This is the entrance that exists to the western side of the existing building, which I'll return to in a moment. And that shows you, as you immediately pan around in a westerly direction, you then are immediately confronted with what is quite a noticeable close-boarded fence which abuts the eastern boundary of the curtilage of this property. It's the occupier of that property who's actually the objector to the scheme. This particular development is an early 80s sort of development, which is developed off its own little turning stub which is adjacent to the trunk road. And you can see this is its garaging in the front garden area. This is the view from the opposite side of the site. And so this is the other range of single-storey buildings. And this is the existing vehicular entrance onto the trunk road at that point, which is an entrance to the site and which is located in front of Church Farm, which you can't really see at this point, but is the Grade 2 listed building set within the depth of the site. And turning further down the road adjacent to that area, this is where, if you're going through the village, that's where the traffic lights are with the turn to Low Moorgate. So that's right in the centre of the village. We're back west way in this direction. So looking at the location plans and the site plan, this is actually a picture of where that close-boarded fence, which is the extent of the neighbouring property, diverges from what we might call the application site proper, and is actually a public right-of-way that goes out into open fields. So there's a hedgerow at that point. And you can see here other buildings within the depth of the site, which I'll return to in a moment. This is the first of the buildings as you go into the site from the proposed westernmost access. And just returning to the west, this particular part of the building here, this is the westernmost access. A section of this building here is demolished, it was proposed to be demolished, to provide for the widened access, which is shown on the location plan. And this wall is realigned to what is the rebuilt end of the building here. So the majority of that building is kept, and it's a similar arrangement for this building on the opposite side, where a widened access is proposed into Church Farmhouse itself. Quickly moving forward, this is a view of the hay barn, which is the southernmost building. And you can see that these buildings are in pretty good order, largely brick with pantile. And the hay barn is the one that's located nearest to the neighbouring property. As you can see, it's a sort of gable form with a sort of slight cat slide roof. as you go around that, this is a view from the opposite side, so you've seen it's currently open at this point here, but it has a sort of domestic scale to it, and quite an attractive building. That's squarer on, so you're going to get a feel for the building as it currently is. And this is a view of the side, the westernmost boundary wall, and you can see beyond it the boundary fence of the neighbouring property, which is slightly higher than the boundary wall. And you can see that here you have the gable window of the neighbouring property with the linked single-storey addition forming its garaging. And you see the outline of some other buildings in the adjacent close. So this is a view looking back up the entranceway. So that car there is sort of on the road. And this is the fence here, which, as you can see, there's an appreciable difference in the height of the fence to the boundary, or what would be the curtilage boundary of this property. This is a view of the rear of that range of buildings that is adjacent to the back edge of the footpath. So it's a section here that would be demolished off that building, but the rest would be retained primarily for garaging, but also storage. And this is a view looking westwards from where that photograph's taken. So I think there's been a degree of re-roofing already going on these buildings by the looks of these tiles, but this looks like a section of new roof. And that's at the building shown on the location plan as the stables, which is one of the units proposed. And that's a view slightly further down the building, looking northeastwards. So again, another building which has got a domestic scale to it. This view is the view of the back of a small single-storey building within the curtilage of Church Farm. This is not hard on the road, but within the garden. A large part of this would be demolished to make a way for the private driveway arrangements to the listed building. So the listed building driveway would sweep through into this area here, and this would be separated from the back of this barn, which is a separate dwelling, as proposed. So this particular shot is off. I'm trying to orient myself now. This is the back off. Make sure I've got the right building here. 14, 15. Just lost myself for a moment there, Jim. Sorry. I think that's the back of the... That's the other frontage range of buildings. So it's this bit that would come off to widen the entrance at the front of the site, this section here. So that's the bit that in the street scene you saw all covered in ivy. This is a view further back on the site. So as you appreciate, these are all brick buildings in reasonably good order. That's the property known as number 10 on the street frontage. This is the property that she's shown as the hay barn, and this is the stables. So standing pretty much next to the granary as that was shown. And this view, looking eastwards through the site in the back of the buildings, is the principal view within the site of the listed cottage, listed farmhouse. This is Church Farmhouse. Okay. And that, we're almost towards the complete back of the site, is the granary. It's fairly obvious that that's the granary. It's got typical, you know, outward granary steps, floor over cart bay openings with a bit of a lean-to on the back. Again, very distinctive building. And again, you're just moving further and further back through the site. So this is the hay barn, this is the granary, and the stables is the other side of that. Again, another view of that footpath arrangement. So the footpath diverges off quite early in this process. The large building at the back of the site, which you just caught a glimpse of there, is the building that is partly demolished and then partly reduced in height to provide more car parking and storage at the back of the site. So a lot of this, as you see it now, is demolished as part of the scheme. And that's all this comes off, and the building's lowered in height. Clearly the objection that we have has largely been around issues of traffic and amenity. Because the application site is located next to the trunk road. In fact, the Highway Authority is Highways England on this particular occasion, who've raised no objection to the proposal or the alterations to the accesses. That's probably not surprising in the sense that as a working farm it probably might be regarded as generating more than what might be expected from the proposed scheme. I think that for us the important point of view here is that these buildings themselves are affecting the setting of a listed building and also a non-designated heritage asset in their own right, and our conservation officer's comments are on the late pages on page 35 if members wish to see them, but the conservation officer is happy with the scheme. I think they're happy that the scheme retains sufficient of the ancillary buildings that are either side of the cottage to keep that street scene appearance, and to some extent the setting of the listed farm is improved by the scheme proposed. I think there have been issues really which are related to in the report that I've lost my screen here, Chairman. Sorry. Which related to the potential for overlooking issues which the reporters wrestle with and suggested conditions to deal with obscure glazing with particular regard to the one unit near to the western boundary. There was also a concern expressed about the number of Velux roof lights in the one unit, the number of them and also the potential for overlooking, but we've since established that they're so high in the roof space that they couldn't possibly be used as a window. So in that sense, we don't really think, Chairman, that there are any residential amenity issues that are sufficient here to warrant a refusal of the application. So subject to the conditions, we are recommending approval.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? No. We'll move into debate then. Would anyone like to take this one? So all members not here this evening.
I think it's an ideal site for development, and I would move approval.
Thank you, Councillor Paul Andrews, seconding that. It's been moved and seconded, so I should put that to the vote. That's unanimously been approved. Agenda item 15, pages 321 to 327 on your agenda, application at Westfield Cottage, Chapel Lane, Wester.
Thank you, Chairman. This particular application is in essence for the erection of a garage in what is the front garden of Westfield Cottage. Although this property is located within the settlement of Westow, it's not located within the designated conservation area, and in fact is in an area of relatively modern development. I think you'd be surprised to see the context of it and think of it as being in Westow. But what you have here is a situation where the existing property, which is this one here, although constructed of stone, it does have a concrete tile roof and is actually set back a relatively significant distance on the site in relation to the dwellings either side. So the dwellings either side, which are shown on the location plan on page 326, are set appreciably further forward. And in fact, that roof line that you see there is of a dwelling that's set further behind on a little cul-de-sac of properties, which is further to the rear. Whilst here, I'll just draw attention to it because there are some of the photographs which show it in its true extent. There is what I can only describe as a substantial conifer hedge, which forms the boundary of the two properties, and it must be 2.5 metres wide. It is an absolute monster. That would be largely ripped out as part of the scheme and fencing proposed. I think there's quite a degree of relief that they're proposing to do that, in the sense that they're proposing to, on the front half of the boundary, replicate this sort of almost like field-type fencing at a low level before it then returns to a higher fence behind the back of the garage that's proposed. The other thing to point out on the amended plans that you've got on page 326 is that they do represent an amended plan which shows the bungalow in the rear, which has a sort of slightly elevated eaves height. It's not a single-storey eaves height. It's about 3 point something. The eaves height of the garage is now back down to the height of that windowsill. So it's been reduced in height, it's been reduced in floor area, and it's been set further back on the site than originally proposed, partly to align it more with the front gable of this property, which I'll show you in a moment, and a line of adjacent concrete sectional garages, which are to the other side, which you've yet to see. So this is within the site. The garage would be situated roughly in this area here. Although this foreshortens the distance, the side gable and the front projecting gable of the adjacent property are actually set some distance away from the hedge, which is a bit of a monster. And that's just panning forward, so you see the roof line of the newer dwelling to the rear. This is the curtilage of the neighbouring property. So you can see it itself has been extended at some time in the past, but there's quite a space between that gable window that you just saw and this hedge. And there it is. It's a bit of a whopper. Somewhere in there is a boundary. So they're proposing this hedgerow is proposed to be taken out, and a fence at this level on the front of the site, and then returned with a higher fence behind it. So you get a feel for how significant that feature is on the neighbouring property, which must have some daylighting impact, as it is, I would have thought. That's the view looking back down the lane. So this is the entrance to the application site. You get a clue for what's coming when I show you it in a minute. This is the apron to the garaging next door, and that's the neighbouring property. It's open fields and countryside beyond. And these are the garages. So there's a line of these garages which are set well forward on the site. And then there's some what I guess was ex-local authority property continuing on in this lane here. So it's not what I would call typical Westo in the sense of what you might conjure up in your mind if we said Westo. We're always very careful when we deal with front garden ancillary buildings. And as you've seen, there has been some objection to that. But I think the context of this site is that given that the existing property is set so far back and the adjacent buildings, including these garages, are set so far forward that the front line of this garage, which is roughly about here, in the proportions now shown, we think is acceptable, Chairman. So that's why we're on this occasion at odds with the parish, who've expressed a sort of an in-principle objection to a garage in a front garden.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? No. We shall move into debate then, and the ward member, Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, Gary, for your report. Yes, it's an odd one in many respects, in that although it is Westo, you wouldn't actually recognise it from the report, the application, or the pictures. Given that although it is a frontage development, a garage in the front garden, as we've already seen, it's still entirely subservient to the property. The view of the site from the, looking at the photograph, the land further to the right, looking at the property, it's seen against the existing buildings and the existing garage blocks. I think we gain, a mitigating factor in that we gain something by losing some of that hedge, and the scale and overbearing nature of the hedge is an entirely plus point to the application, and therefore I will support this application and move approval.
Thank you, Councillor. Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chair. I'll second that. It's part of my division, so I'm very happy to second it. It overlooks an area of high landscape value. I don't see any detriment to it. It's fine. I'm happy to second.
Thank you, Councillor. Mrs. Shields.
Well, I live in this parish too, so I know a bit about it. I understand that the objections that the parish council had originally have more or less gone, because the second sort of plan of this. They lowered the height of the garage. And also the other garage they had, which apparently was sort of not in a very good state, is going to be taken down and will be actually restored to garden, which is a nice way around for a change. So it sounds as though the parish council is now quite happy with it. So I'm going to third it or whatever, vote for it, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote. That has unanimously been approved. Move on to agenda item 16, pages 328 to 340 on your agenda, application at 11 Meadow Road, Pickering.
Thank you, Chairman. This application is for a proposal that is identical to a scheme that was approved in 2012. It was a scheme that was determined by this planning committee because at that time I think we had four, if not five, objections to the proposal that was put forward. So it was considered at length, and I think I'm right in saying that five members of the current planning committee were on the committee at the time, and I think one or two of you might even remember the discussion. Sorry, I'm still on the wrong one. This particular application was for a part single-storey, part two-storey extension. And I think part of the issue was because of the cheap by jowl nature of estate development in this part of Pickering. But I'll briefly try and describe it if members are able to view the plans on page... get a number of the page now. Yeah, page 333, I think it is, Chairman. Yes, 333. And what you're looking at there in terms of the gable elevation currently, this is the application property, and this is the relationship with the neighbouring property, which is the one from which we still have a continued objection. It's because of that objection that we have the application before you tonight, Chairman, notwithstanding the fact that it's the same scheme. This next photo is just having moved round the corner a bit. So this is the adjacent property, its driveway, its garage behind, which if you can just bear that in your mind's eye when I just show you some photographs of the back of the property, because it's very hard to photograph. You'll see there's a slight echelon of the way the buildings sit within the street scene, which you can see this is set forward of that one, which is set forward of that one. They step round the corner. When you go into the rear garden, and I'll show you two or three photographs which are very close to, this is the existing conservatory at the back of the application property, and this is the garage of the neighbouring property. So that already abuts the boundary. And this is it showing it, again, with a slight snapshot. It's very difficult to take meaningful photographs because of the angles. And that's showing it set slightly further back. So this is the back wall of the property. This is the conservatory. The proposed extension comes rearwards at single storey, but to two storey to about this line, at a point where it's abutting the garage. So if you go back to page 333, you can see how that would appear if you're looking at the proposed west elevation, which is how it would be seen from the neighbouring property. Yeah. So that's, and this is the garaging at the back of the application site. So their garage is accessed from round the corner further to the south. So the garage is off over here, and this is the side boundary, which you can see is partly fenced, partly conifered. At this point here, and it's probably a bit too close to tell you, but the rearward extension would be about there. But it's identical to what we approved in 2012. As with any application of this site, there would be some impact, but we assessed that previously and made a judgment that it was a balanced decision, but balanced in favour of the applicant, Chairman. We have a new development plan since we last granted planning permission for this, but the way we approach extensions in the in policy SB16, SB20, assesses the same amenity issues that we did in the Rydell plan of 2002. So I think, Councillor Hope, you probably weren't in the room when I started introducing this, but I think you probably might recall the first application in 2012 where we granted permission. In planning terms, it's very difficult to identify any material change in planning circumstances since the grant of the earlier permission. So we recommend approval as previously, Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? If not, we'll move in. I'm afraid you don't, Madam, no. So we'll move straight into debate. And the ward member, Councillor Miss Andrews.
I think it, like Gary has just mentioned, it would be very difficult not to approve this because it has been approved before, although I don't know why they didn't. Was the same person who applied for it or not? I don't think that matters, does it? If we do don't approve it, then we're leaving ourselves wide open. So therefore, I would recommend we'll go with the officer's decision and recommend approval.
Anybody else wishing to speak? No. Well, I shall second it from the chair. So therefore, it's been moved and seconded for approval. So I'll put that to the vote. That has unanimously been approved. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 17, pages 341 to 348 on your agenda, proposed revisions to the NPPF and developer contributions. I'd like to welcome Jill to the floor. Thank you for bearing with us, Jill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This report just very briefly covers two current government consultations, one on the National Planning Policy Framework, revisions to that document, and some proposed changes to the system of developer contributions. And the report seeks to agree this council's response. The NPPF itself is now 5 years old, and I think the government have taken the opportunity to clarify lots of bits of the document and lots of elements of national policy, and that covers a number of sort of topic areas. The report, however, focused mainly on the changes to housing policies. They are the most significant set of changes to the document, and certainly the most significant set of changes for us in terms of our role as local planning authority. I think none of them are perhaps a surprise. They've all been suggested by government in white papers, and I think we've known that they're on their way, they've been coming. But there are some substantial and significant policy changes. The introduction of new housing delivery test, changes to the definition of affordable housing, and a new national method for calculating housing need. I have to say, I think some of the changes are long overdue and are to be welcomed, particularly the method of calculating housing need, clarification over what constitutes a deliverable supply of housing land, and some clarification around the implementation of the national presumption in favour of sustainable development. But I do think there are some areas which cause us a little bit of concern, in particular the expanded definition of affordable housing. Madam Chairman, the issues are in the report and the recommendations are as outlined.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Thank you, Councillor Paul Andrews.
Chairman, not mentioned in the officer's report, that there is a proposal in the NPPF to refer all applications for hydraulic fracturing to the national significant infrastructure planning regime, which meets in London, and this could mean, I think it's question 37. That they ask, there's a question on it which is put forward in the list of ministers' questions on this. I think it's question 37 that I'm talking about. and that would enable, for example, a large company just to put in a single planning application for the whole of the Vale of Pickering, and that, that application to be determined in London without any local knowledge. Now, I know this is a county matter, it's a county issue, but on the other hand, it would have, I think, a strong, severe implications as far as this authority is concerned. And I'm just wondering, Jill, if perhaps we could consider making some representations against that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Clearly, that's a matter for members if they wish to do so. I mean, the National Infrastructure Commission do determine national infrastructure projects. And it's perhaps not surprising that the government are proposing to roll that out to include hydraulic fracturing. I don't know myself whether that is on a case-by-case basis or if it is a wider area, but clearly if that is something which is a concern for members, we can respond to that particular question.
It is either on a case-by-case basis or on a wide-scale basis, Chairman. I mean, it can be either or any combination of it. And that's one of the things which is so pernicious about it. It talks about it being a nationally significant need, but in fact, there has been in a document produced called the Gas Security of Supply, which was dated October 2017, which was produced by one of the government departments, one that deals with business, I think. And that said quite clearly that because success of the amount of gas that could be extracted through fracking is not known, therefore they've assumed conservatively that there will be no outcome of gas. And even on that basis, there will be gas security of supply until 2035. And on that basis, Chairman, I think it's a very strange recommendation to say that this is such an important, that fracking is such an important thing that it should be included that it should be decided by a body which is not a local planning authority.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to, Councillor? Joy Andrew, I'm sorry.
Thanks. Yeah, firstly, I'd like to apologise as I didn't attend the members' briefing on some of this on the 18th of April, so I might be asking questions that have been answered already, so please bear with me. And I know this proposed response for the consultation covers the policy changes which were considered to be most significant to the district. And like Paul, I was quite concerned that there was nothing in this that relates to the section on oil and on gas production. I mean, as we're all aware, IDZ voted for a moratorium on fracking, as did the five towns and many of the parishes, and do you think it would have been appropriate to have some sort of response for the proposed changes on the oil and gas production segment? Because I found some of it a bit scary.
I think the change is just to the MPF. It's there's not a lot in the current MPPF, and as it's an emerging and relatively new area of energy production, I think that's why it's being included in the MPPF now, is to provide some sort of policy framework for the minerals authorities to work with. Really, I think it's either that or they ignore it completely, and I'm not convinced that's something that is realistic or even something that is helpful. But clearly we can write to government answering and responding to that question, certainly in relation to the role of the Infrastructure Commission in determining applications.
I think this is appropriate, Chairman, because this council has actually made a number of decisions in regard to their view on hydraulic fracturing. And as we have made those decisions, I think it's totally consistent for us to follow those through with those comments in regard to the well, in regard to the two things that Joy and I are talking about.
I've just been flicking through the consultation document and questions while you've been on. Actually, the questions aren't specifically around fracking and gas. They're more general questions than that, aren't they? So I think if you've got an issue, then you need to sort of tease that out, because it's a sort of sub-question or sub-issue of the question that's being asked. That's my interpretation of it. It's questions 37, 8 and 9 by the look of them.
But that doesn't stop us from making those comments, does
it?
No,
I'm not suggesting it does. I'm just saying it's not a specific question about hydraulic fracturing.
Councillor Cleary.
I think, in fact, Gary's just said what I was going to say to reinforce what Councillors Andrews have both said, and I would like to reinforce it. It's not just about oil and gas, but I think really any planning decision that's taken away from district or county to elsewhere, we should show some concern about. So I think we should try and reinforce that message.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to ask any questions? Councillor Mrs. Goodwick.
Only to go back to something I raised earlier about the paper I'd seen that said about more bungalow accommodation for our elderly residents. It came out in a paper from somewhere, but I haven't been able to find it. And I read it because I thought, oh, yes, that is something that is probably more pertinent to Rydale than lots of other places. And the inference was that we weren't making enough provision for elderly residents, and in actual fact we were being discriminatory in that way. So I wish I could put my hand on the piece of paper that I read, or the email that I read. I'd send it to you, but I can't find it.
Thank you. Councillor Dryander, did you have...
I know we've been told a million times possibly, but what is the definition of sustainable?
Well, I think sustainable development is effectively development in the MPPF, the principles that are established in the MPPF. So it's development which is consistent with the development plan and consistent with policies in the national framework. And that's about as much as we get in terms of a definition.
Did you have any further questions, Joy? No. That's fine, okay.
I think I'm right in saying, Chairman, we have, I think following tonight's meeting, we have 2 days to get these comments through to people. And we've, so Councillor Goodrick, if you find that thing and you can point us to it, then we'll make what we can of it. You'll get home tonight and you'll find it within 30 seconds of going through the door. You know you will. So I think, I mean, obviously the tenor, the purpose of tonight's report was really to get, I mean, obviously we had the briefing and to say what appeared to be the major issues for us in terms of, officers' assessment of the situation. But it's 200 pages of consultation documents. There's 70 questions. You know, there's inevitably going to be one or two things that have spurred discussion tonight, you know, with Councillor Andrews and the minerals policy stuff, which, although it's not our baby as such as a minerals planning authority, the issue of local decision making is, and so that's something we can pick up and try and apply to a response. But if there's anything that occurs to you, we've got about 24 hours.
There's any council wishing to say anything any further? If not, I will move the recommendation at 2.1. Can I have somebody to second that, please? Councillor Cleary. Sorry. Yes, Councillor Paul Andrews.
Is that with... You've moved any recommendation. Is that with the comments which have just been taken into... which have just been considered?
Yes, if you could let me finish, we'd have got there. So yes, it is moved and seconded by myself, Mr. Councillor Cleary, with the
comments that have been put tonight by councillors with regards to question 37, with regards to hydraulic fracturing, and Councillor Goodrick's comments with regards to provision for elderly residents in the district. I would now like to put that to the vote, please. Thank you. That has been unanimously approved. Do, as Gary says, do feel free to get in contact within the next 24 hours if you've got anything further to add.
Yeah, we're aiming to press send on Thursday.
We're aiming to press send on Thursday. Sorry, I do apologise. We can just make your responses.
Are there any particular while we're here now?
Yeah, George, sorry. Go through it. Pop your microphone on.
I know I'm probably being paranoid somewhat, but there was a that great weight should be paragraph 201 that shape, great weight should be given to the benefits of mineral extraction is a huge statement, and it's great weight is something that, you know, I know we're not the planning authority on the minerals sort of carry on, but
when you read on, it's got sort of other words that counter that.
To a degree, I mean, not, yeah, like I say, it's maybe me being paranoid, and it makes these sweeping statements that, like, they recognise the benefits of onshore oil and gas development. Yes, there probably are some benefits, but compared to
acceptable environmental impacts.
The
fence, do you want to?
I think we'll probably, yeah, it's probably as well to just have a look, and I know.
Well, it's in that same subject area, isn't it? So
well, yeah, yeah, that's fine. I just.
If you could,
yeah.
Will you be putting those by email?
Yeah.
Would you mind copying me in?
Definitely.
Would it assist members if we just copied you into what we send and then you've got it?
Yes, please. I think we'd all like a copy of what's sent.
And yeah, there is sort of, there was issues with housing, obviously, like everything. You know, I know, Carolyn. You know, and the affordable, which for a lot of people isn't affordable.
Affordable, no.
I think is a huge issue, really, especially with the low incomes that we have here and the high house prices, and to maybe look at it at a completely different angle at how we can. Not necessarily affordable, but social housing or cheap housing, you know, would be. Because it is, people, we are losing people out of the area that are having to live elsewhere to come back into the area where they were brought up to work for not a lot of money.
Thank you. So it has been moved and seconded with the comments that I mentioned earlier, and I said, will you... Councillor, did we vote?
Yeah.
Beg your pardon.
Chair, I think it's been agreed, hasn't it, that people can put in additional comments, and the officers presumably will look at those comments, and if they're in line with council policy, they'll decide whether or not to put them in. If they're not in line with council policy, then obviously they don't get said.
How much time have we got to
not much.
One day, 2 days? Or
2 days.
Gary's wanted to press the press a button on Thursday, so we need tomorrow.
When we did the briefing, we didn't say.
Right, we'll move on to agenda item 18, which is any other business which I have none. Item 19 is a list of applications determined under delegated powers, pages 349 to 355 on your agenda. Agenda item 20 is there's one appeal decision, which was in my ward, which was pleasing to see that was dismissed.
In fact, the inspector, I've seen inspectors on other occasions actually allow an appeal, but not all of it. on this one she dismissed it, and we've now got an application in for us to deal with a bit that she felt was acceptable. You know, so we got a dismissal anyway. But she felt that the side extension was acceptable, but there were some pretty horrendous dormer windows on it that were part and parcel of the scheme. So that I think as an entity it was dismissed.
So now close the meeting. Thank you all for attending and have a safe journey home.